Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place for every stage in life. What if you could visit or have a home that would accommodate anyone at any age, any physical ability, at any time? How cool would that be? That's what we're doing here at Aging in Place. Why me? Because I'm a doctor of psychology, and I specialize in physical spaces and health and wellness. Also, I love designing with intent at any age. Why now? Because we, the baby boomers, want to age in place gracefully, and we want our families around us as much as we can. And why you, the audience? Because we want you to experience what it's like to have a home that's safe, aesthetically pleasing, and that you can live in at any age, with any ability, at any time. I'd like to introduce you now to Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life. Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place podcast at any stage of life. I am here with my friend Greg Fulton, and I'm really excited to have Greg as a guest today because we are talking about home health. And home health care, I think, has a stigma, if you will, if I'm allowed to even say that, that it's strictly for older people. And one of the things that we're doing is talking about how aging in place in your home for anyone of any ability at any age. So I'm really excited to talk to you about all the things that home health care has to offer and really how it's evolved. So before we even get started with that, Greg, can you tell us a little bit about your business and what you do?
Absolutely. Well, great to see you, Debbie.
It's so good to see you.
Yes,
it has.
All right. In-home care, basically what we're doing is we want folks to age in place, obviously, successfully and meaningfully. And what that means is obviously there's a lot of components to that. But what home health does when we come into the home is basically anything from just making sure the environment is safe all the way through physically taking care of people. Like you said, everyone sees that as the senior population, right?
Right.
And it's not necessarily all seniors. There's obviously disabled folks, folks that are coming out short-term surgeries, and they just don't have family support around. So what does that mean? That means someone's got to come in and help them if they want to stay there in their home and not go to a environment that's not their own.
How did home health evolve? Because it's become quite an industry. And as a baby boomer, I used to not think about it at all. And now I think about it every day.
Sure.
I have a daughter who's getting ready to have a baby. We want home health for a while.
Yeah.
You know, it's just really interesting how the whole concept has evolved.
Great question. You know, it really started off with the home health Medicare side, and that would be with the senior population.
Okay.
And that was where the hospitals folks would want to get discharged and not have to go into a rehab center or some kind of environment like that.
Got it.
They actually wanted to go home, and plus it's a cost savings to the government.
Okay.
So the home health evolved where they could go to their home, get physical therapy, you know, occupational therapy, anything from bathing or whatever they needed after a surgery, you know, that type of thing. And it was a Medicare situation. Then you had it layered in where you had supportive care. And this is probably what you remember and I remember from back in the day. That was more of, you know, a mom-pa type situation. That was somebody would hire a neighbor or a friend to come over. Right?
Okay. All right.
Say, you know, mom needs help. You know, she needs help. She can't get in and out of the shower.
Got it.
She just had a hip replacement, whatever that may be.
Okay.
And so they would hire family members. They still do that as a big, as you know, from caregiving. As that evolved, companies started to understand there was a big need for just that supportive care, that getting through that activities of daily living, the things that we take for granted as being healthy individuals, right?
A whole void in the market.
Yeah. And so then it developed into what we do at Right at Home, that supportive care side, which, like I said earlier, it can really range from anything from just safety supervision all the way through transferring and medical skilled care. So it's a very wide range of whatever the need may be.
All right, let's start at the basics then.
Okay.
Let's go through each one of those. I'd like to know what supportive care looks like, because one of the things that we're talking about in the podcast is keeping your home sanctuary livable and visitable.
Okay.
All right. Throughout a lifespan. So what would safety and supportive care look like? What are some things that I should be concerned with that you see that I may not?
Well, and I know you're in, you know better than I do about, you know, universal design
exactly.
and so forth.
Yes.
About every environment being accessible to everyone and being safe. And mm-hmm. so what that would mean when we go into a home, and I'll give you a perfect example, around the holiday season. A lot of people don't realize this. You know, they're going in and putting a lot of decorations up and a lot of things are on the floor, cords and things like that, right?
Yes.
Well, that's when a lot of times, and I think it's like a 20% increase, if I'm not mistaken, in a lot of the ER departments are seeing seniors come in through the holidays because of the simple things of not being able to transfer, mobilize, get around like they used to where things are in the actually objects are in the way. So it's a hazard. So things like that, when we're in the home, you know, we know that. We pay attention to that type stuff where family members may not think about it. They just want the place to look great.
One of the things I learned from you a long time ago that was the best takeaway I've ever had about aging in place, if
sure.
you will, and I wonder if you even remember you telling me this, was the most important thing, okay, for a senior and their home is to have the outdoors easily marked. In other words, your address, if an ambulance has to come,
yes.
somebody has to get to you, that it is clear, you can see the address and where you're going. That was probably the most inspirational piece of advice I have ever gotten. And again, not just because my father lives with me, but
right.
because I have 10 grandchildren.
Exactly.
And heaven forbid if something happened, they could get to me really quickly.
Sure. No, exactly. And that's a great point to go into kind of a different direction a little bit. What we do a lot of in this home health supportive care is helping make sure people are planning. Like you said, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be at a situation of health where it's acute and it's really a lot going on. It can be when they're a lot healthier, and it should be when they're a lot healthier, that families, children, and adults are looking at a plan.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to do in 20 years? Where am I going to be? How am I going to survive financially in 20 years? I think it's not, I hope I get this right. I know the AARP did a study, and it's like between the ages of 53 and 71, only 58% of folks actually have an estate plan in place. That's scary.
Wow.
Because estate plans range from, you know, powers of attorneys and all those types of things that if something happens to you tomorrow, how's the family going to know what to do? You know, they're going to have to jump in after the fact.
So do you find yourself ever talking to family members as well as the actual client about things like that, about being able to broach those subjects? Because
we've talked about this. Yeah.
Yeah, we have. These are tough subjects to talk about, whether it's, you know, death and dying or living wills or, you know, just being able to not go upstairs anymore.
Yep.
How do you deal with all that?
Well, right at home, we have this format that we actually use on a national level. It's called Right Conversations. And it's a guide to actually kind of help what you're talking about because it's a tough conversation.
Wow.
And around the holidays and stuff, it's a great time to, you can actually go online and download this from our websites about how to sit down and approach the subject and actually what subject should you be approaching and how should you approach each subject. And those really encompass a lot of the things that you and I are kind of hitting on.
Exactly.
Let's
kind of go through the list again, just from a planning
sure.
point of view. Basics.
I mean, we'll start with the basics on aging successfully. I mean, that really means, you know, are you doing the simple things? Are you eating correctly?
Okay.
Are you staying active? Do you have positive, supportive people around you? You know, we find in the senior population especially, and a lot of the disabled folks too, because of depression and things like that, we find that these folks kind of isolate themselves.
Mm.
You know, and I know you deal a lot with that.
Mm-hmm. I deal with that a lot. I think depression and isolation are huge.
Yeah.
And it's, how do you create a social environment when you're in your own home? That's one of the quote-unquote disadvantages of living alone in your home.
Exactly. And a lot of companies like ours, that's when I go back to saying the simple things
right.
of safety, companionship. Companionship is probably one of the most important parts of what we do. If there are no children around, if a spouse has lost someone and they're all alone, you know, having a companion come even just a few days a week makes a world of a difference for their socialization.
Do you find that one of your unintended jobs is being kind of a conduit between the client mm-hmm. and the caretakers? And do you find that you're actually, or how do you actually take care of the caretakers? Also, I mean, I've always wondered if it's my dad or my mom, and I'm the emotional caretaker.
Right.
Okay. How important is it to be able to share that duty with someone?
Oh, sure. When it goes back to, if it's a family caregiver, and you know this person, that folks like us, we call that respite care, where we come in and offer an alternative to you having to provide all of the care, and that would be an individual that we can make sure feels comfortable in the environment. Like you said, the caregiver has to be comfortable in the environment too.
Okay.
You know, a lot of companies, a lot of people always look at, okay, you know, what does the client need? And obviously that's very, very important.
Well, sure.
But you want to make sure that match is there and that compatibility is there with that caregiver. So, you know, there's a lot I can go into in detail, but it's really basically the basic facts of introducing people, getting people to know each other, making sure they're comfortable together, and then you've got a match, and then you try to keep that match.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk a lot more here on the Aging in Place podcast about home health care and right at home with Greg Fulton. Hi, I'm Dr. Debbie Lines. Design elements are psychologically and physically supportive and conducive to health and wellness. To learn more about what Lines on Design can do for you, for more information on certified aging in place and facilitative and supportive design, look for us at linesondesign.com. That's L-Y-N-E-S on design.com. We are back with Greg Fulton. We are here on the Aging in Place podcast, and we're talking about home care. And sure. I love how you framed that before. I always say home. I have a tendency of saying home health care, but really is home,
really
care.
Home care.
And we were talking during the break about not only do you want the home safe, but you want it to look good too.
Yep.
Quick question for you. If I was curious about things that I could do in my home to adapt it, mm-hmm. readily.
Right.
All right. My son broke his leg or whatever has happened. Yeah. Is that something that you and your staff ever do to come and take a walk through?
All the time. We have nurses that see the clinical side of things. We have social workers that understand that. It's called an in-home consultation.
Okay.
And it's a great question because a lot of people will ask us to do that and we're good with it and really not need our services right away. But it's a great way for us to meet the family.
Exactly.
Right.
And what we talked about in the first segment was the pre-planning
sure.
piece. So again, don't ever be afraid. And that's something that you guys are really, really good
yeah.
at. Is I remember the first time I talked to you, it was more an information exercise for me
right.
and an exploration of topics that I wasn't really familiar with nor
sure.
comfortable with.
Right.
Do you find that a lot of people are in that same situation? The kids call or the parents call?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you've never really had any direct experience needing anything like home care, you probably aren't thinking about it. You probably
mm-hmm.
don't even realize what's available to you. What's the capacity of that? What does it look like? What does it mean? And that's a lot. We do a lot by phone too, though, because you can
okay.
imagine, you know, we have a lot of folks that their kids live in, you know, five states away.
Sure.
You know, that average we talk about, the average kid, 280 miles away from mom and dad, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So they're calling in and they just want that information. So we give that information by phone. It can be an hour long conversation. And then it could lead, that's typically where it starts. And then it would lead to they feel comfortable and confident in us.
Okay.
And then they're willing to say, hey, mom, dad, please let this, you know, group come out, just meet with you, talk to you, look at things, give you ideas, and then we do that. And they typically will circle back around and use us when the need comes.
What we're really talking about is how you even begin the process. And
correct.
I think that was probably the biggest barrier mm-hmm. to home care was beginning the process. Because I think, again, whether it's my son with a broken leg or my aging parents, there's a resistance. Is it because
sure.
they just don't know?
Well, and I also think it's think about, you know, you're talking about bringing strangers into your home, right?
Okay. I never thought about that.
I mean, you're a family caregiver, so that's not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents, whoever feels very comfortable with you. But we're talking about bringing someone that they've never met, don't know, right? So you have to get them past that point. And the way we do a lot of that is we don't make it just one single person. We try to invest a couple of people into those relationships. And what I mean by that is typically a nurse or a social worker, someone from a management side that will work along with the caregivers and the family to create better communication and also to make sure that we're doing a good job. In the home. And that all becomes a relationship. And we find that the families are, you know, our nurses are on the phone with families all day, every day, it seems like, because they turn to them.
Well, I think what's interesting about this whole discussion is I didn't realize there were so many players, if you will. You're talking about nurses, you're talking about social workers, you're talking about direct care personnel. Can you share with us a little bit about all the people that are involved and then kind of what the village looks like? Because it is a village, and I've been out there. It's a village.
It's a village. Mm-hmm. We have about 300 direct employees, and that's this really starts from a standpoint of human resources, HR, okay. And that's a big department for us. That's where it all is created for us. And we have a long onboarding process with screening and all that kind of good stuff. Once you get to that point, we really believe in training. And really, a lot of our direct care providers, as you call them, which they are, they work at a lot of different places because that's just the business model
sure,
out
yes,
there. And you know
it
that.
Is. They I
can
do
work
know
for
that.
Hospice
yep.
and home
that's
care
right.
at the same time.
Exactly.
So, but we believe in no matter who they're working for, that foundation, that training is so hugely important. And we are licensed by DHEC, and mm-hmm. most states do license home care.
Especially, okay, I didn't realize
yeah,
that.
We
okay.
are. So we're regulated, and there are requirements, but we go way above that. And part of that is we just went through Joint Commission accreditation.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah, it took us about a year. We got through that process, and our office in South Carolina and Georgia both are accredited. That really is a lot of work, but what that does, I know you're thinking this way, and it's true. We've already seen it just 3 months in. It really raises the bar of your service level. When you put those layers in of regulations and things, and a lot of times business owners shy away from that type of stuff because it's a lot of money.
Right.
It's a lot of time. But when you put those things in place, and now I understand why hospitals and people like that do that, these
right.
facilities,
exactly.
it really raises that bar because you have to meet that criteria on every single thing you do. And I've seen a change in our company there. But to kind of go back to where you asked me the question, HR, so then we go through a long onboarding process. Once they get through the screening process, they go through about an 8-hour orientation, if
right.
you will.
Got it.
Part of that's hands-on with nurses, be it wheelchair, be it transfer, be it a Hoyer lift, be it whatever the need
wow.
may be in
okay.
that training. We go through that process, and then we regularly go through those throughout the year. So they are mandatory. We have health fairs where they have to come in and do that type of training.
Okay.
So you want the best employees you can get. You want to train them as best you can. And then you want to layer that out, like I mentioned earlier, with the supervision. And it's not really supervision. It's more support and coaching.
Do you,
of the care.
Okay. Do you also have resources that are ancillary to what you do, such as an attorney or people that you resource out to? Because my assumption is that when we're pre-planning and you're sort of my first line of defense now, you're my go-to guy,
yeah.
I'm going to be asking you, what about an estate attorney?
Yeah.
What about my will?
Yep.
What about other directives? What about medical power of attorney?
Great point. On the intake packet, which is a packet that when we go into that home originally, we talked about
yeah.
to just do a consultation, observe, whatever. Part of that is we do have questions in there to ask them what kind of support they have in place.
So prompting already.
Prompting.
Got
everything.
It. Yep. Okay.
And then we will find out immediately if there's a need somewhere. And then we would maybe even suggest that, you know, you may want to look into a third party, mm-hmm. an attorney. Then if they get to the point where they're interested and they want referrals from us, then obviously being in the community for 15 years,
right.
we got them. You know, all it is a matter of here's a list of attorneys and maybe you should call one of those or have your family members call. And then we're not a part of it. You know, that's their specialty.
From the time that I think that I might be interested in home care to the time that I actually receive home care, beginning with the process, how much time does that take? Is that as quick as a week? Is it a few days?
Whatever the situation may be, I'll tell you the way we like to do it is that we've had someone like yourself be proactive
okay.
and reach out to us ahead of time before that need gets dire situation.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can go through that process. And we like to go through an interviewing process, introduce some caregivers, get into the home, learn the environment, those types of things. So we like to space that out. And ideally, it's 3 or 4 days is a good time frame on that. Okay, we can usually put it all together that fast. There we do have situations, though, mm-hmm. where maybe a hospice company has called and said, hey, listen, we've got a situation. We need help tonight. And so then we don't have time to do all of that type of thing. So we still put it together, make it happen, get a nurse out, do what, and we have somebody there in the house that night. So there's different types of situations.
Can home health be around the clock, just an hour here and there? Can it be just respite or full time?
Yeah, it sure can. It can go from anywhere from, like you just said, a couple hours a day, whatever, coming in and out, to 24-hour care. And what a lot of people don't understand also about home care is, home is where you are. That home may not be a private residence, right? That home may be an assisted living facility.
I never thought about that.
Could be a skilled nursing facility. It's whatever, wherever you actually are living. And sometimes, a lot of times, we are called in to provide that supportive care in those environments.
I never knew that.
So, you know, like, you know, a lot of people think assisted living maybe would be competition to home care because, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to leave your home and go into assisted living.
No, you all play together.
We play together.
I've seen
very,
that
very well.
Yes.
And actually, assisted living is probably one of our biggest referral sources because you do have people that are moving in and out of independent into assisted, into skilled, transition phases where if we get to know the family years in advance, we typically will follow them through that whole process. We may not stay with them in that environment. We will transition them into that environment. And so it's a lot of that. So home can be anywhere home is.
I love it. What we're going to do is take a quick break, Greg.
Sure.
And then we're going to come back. And on this last segment, what I'd love to do is chat a little bit about some takeaways, some practical things when you walk through a home that you look at, exactly like the courts that we
sure.
were talking about. Stay with us. We'll be back on Aging in Place podcast.
For more podcast episodes, links, information, and media inquiries, please visit our website at aginginplacepodcast.com as we transition through life with the comfort and ease you deserve. Discover how you can create a home that will adapt to you as you journey through life and the changes it will bring. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as our host, Debbie Lines, and her expert guests discuss relevant topics to creating a home for all decades in life. Don't miss our weekly episodes of Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life.
All right, we are back here on the Aging in Place podcast. Once again, we're with Greg Fulton. It's such a great treat to have you here and have you grounded to answer all of these questions that we've wanted to know.
And I'm having fun, by the way.
That makes it good also. One of the things that we want to talk about are some practical things. When I have someone who has had a broken hip,
sure.
When I have a 3-year-old who struggles to climb up my steps and get in the house, or I have a 91-year-old dad, and I just want to make sure that my home's visitable for him, what are some things concretely that you look for when you're kind of doing an assessment? And if you don't mind taking me from your walk in the front door.
Sure. Well, you walk in the front door, you want to see, is there a rug right in the way?
Oh.
A lot of slippery rugs, right? There's no padding, no mat up under them, and they're sliding around. That's a huge fall risk. All right, right up front, walking into the front door.
So stop
yeah.
for there.
Yeah.
Stop there. So let's write, fall risk is huge.
It is very, and that's when we're actually called in a lot to prevent fall risk. When I mentioned earlier in the segment about that we're in a lot of assisted living facilities,
yes.
places like that, the reason we are there is they are a big fall risk. Could be whatever. They just had a UTI, whatever the situation
mm-hmm.
of the body is, that they're just not able to get around. And the last thing anybody wants is a fall.
Is that one of the biggest problems with, as we get older, with our balance and just instability?
It is. And, you know, and I'll tell you, you know, we talked about it.
Yeah.
I just went through a hip replacement. And at my age of 55, you know, I'm still fairly young. But it took a lot to
mm-hmm.
to recover and get my balance back. And actually, as of 3 months in here, I'm still working on recovery of balance.
Interesting.
So you could imagine being 85 going through that,
right.
that same process. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Technology has really helped throughout the years, but it's still a lot of physical work involved with that. So what happens is what we see, unfortunately, is the falls risk really, really intensifies in those 80s, you know, when you get past 80 years old. I mean, you know, you're just not
stable.
Yeah, you're not like
mm-hmm.
you were. And what we see when that happens is it's just not a good situation if you fall
okay.
and break a hip or something like that, because the recovery is so hard and so long that a lot of folks end up having to go into a skilled rehab center,
mm-hmm.
and that's not what they want to do.
Okay.
They want to go back home, and that's the reality of it is, unfortunately, some of them never go back home. Because of that situation. So a lot of our business is fall prevention.
So, boy, that was, and we've just made it to the front door.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We got a long way to go. Yeah.
Okay. So we walked through the front door. And again, you talk about some really concrete things that people can take away and learn from this. I think that's number one, really paying attention to rugs at the beginning. Okay.
Sure.
Now we're walking in through the kitchen. And what are you looking for when you enter a kitchen?
Well, we're probably not going to ask to go into the refrigerator right away.
Okay.
And I say that jokingly, but we'd like to. Because the reason is if we do find a lot of times that there is a lot of items that should be discarded that are in the refrigerator, that those
expired items,
and they're eating those items, not really paying attention to that. And we know what happens after that.
Wow.
Exactly. So we do that. That is part of our process of when someone comes out of the hospital. When we go into the home right away, that is part of what we do.
Okay.
We don't ask to do it. We do it because we know the medications need to be reconciled. They've all changed.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
That's why we have nurses involved. They get on the phone with all these, you know, they got three or four different physicians. They just had a hospitalist at the hospital giving them meds. Somebody's, if there's not a family around, who's going to reconcile
that? Who's going to manage? Yeah.
Who's going to reconcile that?
Never thought about that.
I know I'm going all over the map. But,
no,
world is like that on a daily
basis.
That's
exactly right. This is something that everyone's dealing with simultaneously.
Exactly.
I wish we could tease them out.
That's the magic word, simultaneously.
Right.
It is all going on at one time.
That's right.
And so we want to get to that refrigerator. We want to get those items out of there. And if that means that we need to go to the grocery store and get them some new items, mm-hmm. then so be it.
So be it.
Yeah, so be it.
Okay, so in the kitchen now, my takeaway for that is look for expired items. What about just lack of food?
Very good point. Sure. There may not be anything in the house to eat. And that's, you know, and a part of, if we're there providing the care, and that's a great question. You think about that. We actually, part of that training process, we offer cooking classes.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah. Because you would be amazed at, you know, a lot of the, maybe the caregivers didn't grow up exactly with the same environment, same diets as the client, right?
Good point.
And we hear this a lot. I want a poached egg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you should be surprised
that, exactly.
that maybe someone, a caregiver in the deep south doesn't do poached eggs.
Right.
That's not what they ate growing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we train on things like that. But yes, you would have to check and make sure there's food in the home. And that's when all that communication where I talked about the nurse
Correct.
Layer, social work layer, we don't want to put all that burden on the caregiver. But they will obviously jump in and help. Then it's a team effort. To get through all of those items.
Going into the bathroom, let's start the bathroom. Let's do bedroom. Walking into a bedroom, what do you look at there?
Are they able, at whatever they're coming home from, are they still able to get in and out of that bed?
Okay.
And they may not be able to get in and out of that bed. It may be a situation where they need a hospital bed. They need something lower. They need something that we can move around and take off the bars and help support and slide with slide bars and things like that. You never know the situation. Typically, that's information we would know coming out of a hospital.
Okay, so, great.
Yeah, it wouldn't take us to get to the home to know you need a hospital bed.
But I will say this. Oftentimes, I look at older homes and it's not, the doors aren't wide enough.
Great point.
Right?
For wheelchairs.
To get wheelchairs in.
Great point.
And it's getting bigger now. We used to need 36 inch, but now it's like 42.
And I don't know that you resign. And the toilets are a lot higher
exactly,
now.
Exactly.
And that's changed just over the last few years.
Exactly. And now I don't think you can buy a low profile toilet anymore.
I think you have
to have one that is ADA compliant, universally designed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So walking into a bathroom, that scares me. That's probably the room that scares me the most.
Yeah.
With wet
slick
surfaces.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Talk us through some of that.
Yeah, that is something coming out of the hospital. Typically, if they're coming out of some kind of rehab or hospital, we'll know if they need typically a shower chair or things like that to support them in the shower. But what we don't know until we get to the home, do they have anything? Is it been built out for that? Have they thought about that in advance? Are there grab bars, you know, for the showers, things like that? That is something that you asked earlier was a great question about. When you come to us early on, and we're doing that a consultation in the home, well, we know where things are headed for most all of us.
Right.
You know, there's going to be more and more need that you're going to have. And those conversations can actually start at that point, meaning, hey, you know, you have the resources now, you have the cognitive ability to make all your own decisions and all those kind of things like that. So why don't you look at doing some remodeling maybe on your, you know, lower downstairs bathroom, things like that. We can put you in touch with a couple of folks to get some estimates.
And let me just share, that is not a cost prohibitive venture. Yeah. If you can always put, wood studs in and prepare for the grab bars. You don't even have to put those in yet. Yep. But I tell you, if you go and look at some of the places for hardware and toiletry and cabinets now, they're beautiful. And they are universally designed.
Sure.
What about the shower? What about handheld versus just the regular shower? What about a bench? What about chairs, seats, things like that? How do you feel about that?
Well, if we need to get them that seat, that's easy. I just, like I was talking about through my recovery, you know, I put a bench in mine and I don't necessarily need it now, but I left it. You know, it's just convenient to have there now at this point. So those are types of things that you would want to look out for. And those are easily accessible, fairly inexpensive, some of those items to get.
Let me ask you just a basic question. We've only got about a minute and some left. And before we go, if people want more, they want to know more about home healthcare. They want to know more about Right at Home. They want to know more about what you do. Sure. Are there resources in place that they can really come and just get educated, if you will?
Yeah. If you know, most people are savvy enough to really work their way around websites. And I always say that we've spent a lot of money and time on layering out our websites. We have one, you know, for Hilton Head, South Carolina, and we have one for Savannah, Georgia. We have different ones for different communities. And we really layer that out where you can really go there and you can pick out scenarios. And dive into what scenario you're looking at, and it'll give you a plan of care.
Okay.
What we would maybe suggest that you do, and that goes way back to where you talked about a couple hours a day or 6 hours a day or 8 hours a day. A lot of people really don't know what that need may be. There is no magic silver bullet to that. And I think that's something that we really like to go in, and that's actually on the website. You can kind of create that. Mm-hmm. Is what is your, before this event that you needed care, what's your daily, what's it look like for you every day? What do you do? Do you get up and make breakfast? Do you go watch TV? Do you go for a run? Do you do this? We need to get back to where you were, and that's the plan.
Well, I can tell you this. You have given me, you have given our audience a gift today.
Well, thank you.
Here's the main part of the gift. You've demystified, okay, what home health care really is. And I think you've broadened the scope of what it is also, because I think many of us have sort of a predetermined idea of what it was. So Greg Fulton from Right at Home, thank you for joining us. Thank you all for joining us here on the Aging in Place podcast.
Please contact us at rightathomehiltonhead.net or rightathomesavannah.net, and you should get all the answers answered there. If not, give us a call, 843-815-7890.
I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, Tracy. Tracy is naturally curious and always creative. And when we were doing the Aging in Place podcast, she said, there are so many quick tips that I can think of offhand. My response, who knew? She's going to be with us every week, giving us a quick tip and a hint that is a practical application.
Thanks, Debbie. Have a hang up. If you have any pants hangers, you know the small hanger with the clips on both ends. Or if you don't, you can still buy them at your local retail store. These hangers are handy to clip your notes, reminders, phone numbers, and even your recipes. Hang one on your kitchen cabinet with your grocery list. Hang one on the front door with delivery instructions. Once you start using them, you will find them handy in almost any room. This is the time a hang up would be good. So here's to you, who knew? Now hang that one up.
Greg Fulton was our guest today. He was amazing, wasn't he? From Right at Home. All right. As you know, on every episode, we do a takeaway. Here's the takeaway for today. I think you're going to be excited by this one. Are you ready? Home health and any home care agency is not just for the old. It's not just for the ill. It is for anyone at any stage in life. Don't be afraid to call a home health agency and explore all the opportunities that are out there when you need help or you need respite. Again, thank you for joining us here on Aging in Place Podcast. Have a great week.
Aging in Place Podcast is hosted by Debbie Lyons and produced by Henrik de Gior. If you have any comments or questions, send an email to debbie@agingInPlacePodcast.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring this podcast, email us at pr@agingInPlacePodcast.com. Thank you for listening to Aging in Place Podcast.